F1A. Number 10A.
Well, before we go on, I must make a correction on the last hour. The last hour when I was talking about Zechariah, and I was presenting Zechariah as the one that is at the point of intersection of Christ as of science as the Christ. I said that Zechariah is built up as the first one in the minor prophets who builds on the four sides of the city of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. And then I said this is similar to the textbook, where in the textbook, science as the Christ is recapitulation, the chapter on recapitulation. And then I made a mistake. And I said, there too, recapitulation is built up in the 4x4, in the absolute sense and relative sense, that makes 4 times 4, 16, and the absolute and relative twice is 32. Now, that is not correct. That applies to the platform. But it is correct when I say that it has a similar position as the chapter on recapitulation, because recapitulation among the chapters is also the first chapter that shows or that builds on the 4, but not on the 4x4, but on the 4x3, making 12 questions and answers, and each one is then seen from an absolute sense and relative sense, making twice 12 is 24 question and answer. This is the correction I have to make. This thing can happen when one talks freely, and so it really didn't touch the substance of what I was saying. Yes. Now, we have done the verticals, and we could easily ask ourselves, have the horizontals any value? Well, in most cases, naturally, the verticals are that which has the dominant tone in it, so that one usually flows in the vertical, because there one goes out from God and sees what happens when we deduce from God. What we have been doing up to now, are you aware that what we have done since we started out with the prophets was a deductive way? Is that clear? It's a deductive way. Deductive means that one goes out from one principle and deduces from the one principle to the various facets of that one principle. At the end of this week, we'll do the very opposite. We'll show the matrix in an inductive way. The inductive way is the way I have found the matrix. The inductive way is the way that we have to use when we don't know what is in a text. Then we have to use the text as our basis, and from there, in an inductive way, try to find the principle of what lies behind the text. So that we'll do towards the end of the week. Up to now, we have just been using the deductive way, which would mean that if we would have a very cultured consciousness of the categories, a very cultured consciousness, say, of the category of the Christ, which is the roof categories, and then have a very cultured consciousness how that one Christ, when it is seen from absolute Christian science as a calculus, what that would mean, that we would in a deductive way come to those epitomes which we have on top of the verticals. That we would say, that Christ is the divine idea. If I go out from divine science, then the Christ is the divine idea. On the level of absolute Christian science, that Christ then shows itself as a calculus of word, Christ, Christianity, and science, but always dominated by the Christ touch. So we could, if we would have a very fine consciousness, define those four, namely as the monopotency of God good, as the manifestation of God, of the Christ-likeness, then as the preservation of the idea or the eternalization of the idea, and finally the idea operating in its principle. We could deduce that if we knew the science clear enough. We could also, if we were cultured enough, deduce the index J and say, how does the Christ affect really the human standpoint, and could define, oh yes, as a word, it would affect us by showing us and revealing us the purpose of the Christ idea. That's what the Christ idea has in view, and we would have to define the purpose of it. And then as the Christ, we would see that it is the Christ which enforces the translation, which is the manifestation that comes to the flesh to destroy incarnate error. And that destroying of incarnate error we would consider as the outcome, as Christianity, namely as the disappearance of evil and the appearing of good. And we would see that Christ comes to us as understanding, just as in the Christ translation on page 115 in the textbook, it comes right down to understanding, namely idea as the immediate object of understanding. We could do that. And if we have those indices clearly deduced from the one Christ idea, then we could easily, through the point of intersection, define what each box, what each prophet would have to say. Not what he says, but what he has to say. Not in terms of 2,500 years ago, but in tonality. We would be able to give the prophecy, to show what is the spiritual message of each prophet, because it's a scientific message. And so could build up this whole matrix in a deductive way. Did I explain that clearly enough? Yes? That it is so that we can say, this is wonderful to feel that there is a one infinite being at work. And that one infinite being is constantly interpreting itself to us. And whoever is transparent for it will hear it. It isn't Hosea who made up the prophecy. It isn't Joel who made up the prophecy. It's the Christ idea as the word that defines what the prophecy of Hosea must be. It is the Christ idea that says, in, say, the Christ as Christianity, says exactly what Micah must show, because it's defined through categories. So these prophets were not just talking something. They had to say what was dictated to them. Dictated to them not by a mystical God, but by the science of God. Therefore, through the categories of God. Just as Mrs. Eddy did not write Science and Health. She says, I would blush to say that I'm the author of Science and Health. I'm only the scribe under order. Well, who was ordering her? What was that? That is not the mystical God who took her and said, now take the pen and write. It was really the science of being that was shining through her receptive mentality or consciousness, and was writing down what God wanted to write down, what the science of the idea what divine science wanted to write down. And if we look at the Bible and the textbook this way, we can see that they were all scribed under order, so that we become interested not in the scribes, but in the principle that was dictating it. And saying that principle is really that which interests us, and not who was the transparency for it. We can give great honor for somebody who is a transparency for a spiritual idea, but as the Revelation has said over and over in the Revelation of St. John, that Jesus said to John, don't worship me, worship God. Don't worship the channel, worship the origin. Don't worship Moses, and don't worship Elijah, don't worship Hosea, Joel, and Amos, and so on. Don't worship Mrs. Eddy, worship the principle that is behind it. That is the great point, that is the motivating and the moving power behind every revelation. Yes. This was a nice side remark. We came out from the point that we could, if we are trained and clearly trained, we could actually rewrite the prophetic age in the terminology of today, and could have built up that matrix deductively, which we couldn't. We had to find it inductively through the text. Now, the question is, can we read also the matrix horizontally? And what is the difference when we read it horizontally? And so we take just a few moments and consider this whole Christ matrix horizontally. The very first horizontal is the word, and we have to remind ourselves that now horizontally we always have the relative standpoint, not the absolute standpoint, always the standpoint that we take in regard to the prophets. And so we had there the divine purpose defined. Perhaps I could have worded it differently, perhaps to say, well, the proposition is defined, or the setting out of the proposition. It always has to do the word with giving first a statement about the subject under consideration. If the word is that which gives a statement, a declaration, about the subject under consideration. What is the subject under consideration here? Well, the subject under consideration here are those four epitomes in the vertical. That is being under consideration. So, in a way, you say, well, the divine purpose defined. What is the purpose? Well, the purpose that is under consideration are the verticals. Don't forget that. So it must. So if we go horizontally, we can say, well, we find here really the divine purpose of those four great categories of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science from an absolute standpoint. Namely, we come to the first one, to Hosea, and we begin to realize that Hosea must first define the purpose of the Christ. The Christ's purpose here is to show that in God we must see that God only wants to manifest itself as good and never as evil. That there is no power besides God, there is no evil power besides God. And God, because it's under the Christ, wants to express itself as God good and never as anything else. As Obadiah, we go now horizontally, as Obadiah, that purpose should be that it would really that it would really show that that applies to us, that applies to each individual, namely to each individual that is the likeness of that God good, and so shows that the purpose of the Christ here is to bring down within us the Esau and to establish within us the Jacob. That is the purpose of the Christ as it comes to men. Nahum would show what is the purpose of Christianity, would show, well, if the Christ in Obadiah comes to us and establish the idea man in us, then Christianity would have had the purpose to preserve that idea eternally, so that that idea can never be touched by error, can never be overthrown by error, can never be sick, nor sinful, nor dying. That it is preserved eternally. That's the purpose of the Christ at the point of Christianity. And Haggai would say, well, the purpose of the Christ is that he reveals to us and demands from us that we actually build up really the temple of God, that we operate for principle, and that we are not operating for ourselves, for our sealed houses. So you have a whole definition, so to say. The word defines. The word always defines first the subject and says, I define now the fourfold operation of the Christ. Namely, that the fourfold operation of the Christ is to show that God is only manifesting good, Hosea, that good comes to us, because Christ translates, comes to us in its likeness and not in an unlikeness, that's Obadiah, that it comes to us in its likeness which is eternal, that's Nahum, that can never be destroyed, that will stay, and that it comes to us as idea that is operating for the glory of God and not for our glory. So in this way you can just see that those horizontals just first define the range, so to say, of the Christ idea, what the Christ idea wants to fulfill fundamentally. It does not yet show how it is going to fulfill it. That will be shown then in the second and third and fourth horizontal. Yeah, is that clear? Huh? So that we first are acquainted with the fact, what does the Christ at all want to do? See? So that I go again through it and say, what is really the purpose of the Christ, of that absolute Christ when it comes to the human? What is the purpose of it? And it says, well, the purpose of the Christ is to show that God only expresses itself as good, never as evil. Hosea. And the Christ is that when God expresses himself as good, it expresses himself by translating God himself to every point, to every individual man, to establish in man the man, Obadiah. And it comes to us as God's likeness, as man, and that is the idea of God, and that is indestructible. Nahum, that can never be wiped out again. Nothing can overthrow that again. That remains. But it remains, now we come to Haggai, but it remains for one purpose, namely that we see that idea is an idea of God and not my idea. Therefore, it operates for God. It does not operate for me. It operates for God's purpose, not for my purpose. And so it's brought back again to God, good, as a feedback to the world. Can you see it's just first giving a statement? And it has not answered to us, but how does it do it? What happens when that happens? What is going on when that Christ comes to us? So we need the next horizontal. And need the next horizontal, which says this is a Christ horizontal, which we have epitomized as the enforcement of the translation. Which translation? It's not the enforcement of the first translation from God to man. It's the enforcement of the second translation, the translation of mortal mind back into the third degree, translating the first degree of depravity, translating that via the second degree to the statement of the third degree, bringing out the third degree. In the third degree, mortal mind disappears, and that then is the effect of it, which then will be the third horizontal. So the process of enforcing a translation back to the original is now the Christ horizontal here. So all these prophets here will have to show that dualism is brought back to monism, so to say, that two-ness is brought back to oneness. Now, this is seen so nicely in Joel. There we had it very clearly. We had there the army of the locust and the cankerworm and the palmer worm and the caterpillar, one great army coming into Judah, coming into every house, into every room in Judah, and just over flooding Judah until Israel turned and worshipped God. And then he says, this is the army of the Lord. It's not another army. The army of the Lord is not another army than the army of the locusts. It's the same army, but the moment we turn and take the right standpoint, we begin to see that two-ness does not exist. That it's only our false standpoint that builds up a duality, but that in reality there is no two-ness, there's only oneness. So Joel shows that and says, look here, that's what is, that God is one and only, so there is only one army. And the Christ forces, Israel forces us to accept that new standpoint. If we do not want to accept it and resist it, we are a Jonah. Then we try to escape it and so go to Tarshish, out of the land of Jehovah, over to Spain, where there are other gods, where there are other idols and so on. We try to flee away from the Lord, and the Lord just doesn't let that happen and takes it right back and says, come home and fulfill your mission. So he translates the dualistic sense of Jonah, the individual. Now we have the individual in the second vertical. Translates the individual resistance and rebellion against God and translates it right back to the point of accepting God's command. And so he arose and went to Nineveh and preached in Nineveh. Habakkuk, you remember, was the same thing. That in Habakkuk we also had that translation, namely the translation of the standpoint, back to the right standpoint. There Habakkuk was saying, I only see that mortal mind is victorious. I only see that matter is victorious. I only see that the five physical senses tell me that mortal mind and evil is victorious. But then came the command from God, now come up to the top of the tower and watch what you see. What do you see if you change the standpoint from how you look at things to that standpoint where you look out how God looks at things? Then you can't see any more really two-ness or duality. Then you only see the superabundance of being. And that the earth is filled with the glory of God as the water covers the sea. Again, can you see a translation? There is always there a point in it where we turn. In Joel, Israel turned. Jonah turned. Habakkuk turned. It's always that turning, that call, return to the Lord. Zechariah, we have not taken that in detail, so perhaps we see not that as clearly as we see the other ones, but he too is just showing that we have to turn away from the human calculus, from the calculus of those horses, the seven horses and so on, and turn and see at the calculus from a divine standpoint, from the standpoint of grace, from the standpoint of those two olive trees, which symbolize really those two great standpoints of truth and love, and say, look out from truth and love, and you see the divine infinite calculus. Yes. So, can you see the common denominator? I say common denominator, just thinking back to our first or third hour when we began, where we were looking at the definition of a matrix, and where we said we must remember that that a tabulation is only then a matrix if the verticals have a common denominator and the horizontals have a common denominator. Without the common denominator, this would only be a tabulation. Therefore, we have to give to each index, we have to give a definite common denominator. And the clearer that common denominator is expressed, the clearer the whole matrix is. So if we only would put on the top Word, Christ, Christianity and Science, on the side also Word, Christ, Christianity and Science, all right, we would have a common denominator, but it wouldn't mean very much because the Word has many meanings, the Christ has many meanings, Christianity has many meanings, and Science has many meanings. So that's why I always put into a matrix a clearer definition of what is meant with those four terms.